Stafford rolling to his right and throwing that way and snuck it in for Cooper Kupp. Touchdown for the Rams. Kyler magic before in this place, in this direction. Murray stays on his feet. Now he'll go down. And that's how the game will end. It's a three-sack performance for Aaron Donald.
And the Rams beat the Cardinals last night to tighten up the NFC just a little bit tighter, as the Packers now would be the number one seed as they beat Arizona head-to-head earlier this year. The Buccaneers, the Packers, and the Cardinals all 10-3 in a three-way tie. The Bucs lose out on the conference tiebreaker, but that could have changed by the end of the season. Rams win last night 30-23, and a big win for the Rams, who still have a chance to win the division title as well. They're now 9-4. Local sports, we hand it off to Dusty. We'll go through the schedule, and then we'll hear from some of the coaches that tonight's games will have on the radio.
Yeah, first we do want to let you know we have high school wrestling locker room chats coming up tonight on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com around 5:15. We'll talk to the head coaches of Beloit Smith Center in Osborne here this evening. If you want to listen to those, you can always listen online as well at katycountry94.com if you're out of the listening area. Again, high school wrestling locker room chats this evening. That'll get us into our basketball coverage on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Through the Lake, Republic County at Beloit on Katy Country 94 and NCKSSports.com online video stream. And then on Z96.3, it's Rock Hills at St. John's Tipton. Also online, katycountry94.com. We'll start at 5:50 pregame on both of those and tip at 6 o'clock. With boys games following. Also tonight, Lakeside is at Bennington. We have Osborne at Victoria, Wakefield at Southern Cloud, a bunch of Northern Plains League non-league games going on here this evening for those teams in the area. Also, Marysville is at Concordia tonight. A couple Northern Plains League regular league schedule games have been postponed. Sylvan Lucas at Lincoln's postponed because Lincoln's closed their school up for this week and then through the rest of this semester until next semester. So also Natoma at Thunder Ridge has been postponed to January 7th due to sickness at Natoma. So those are a couple games that were originally on the schedule that are not here for this evening. So again, high school hoops coming up here tonight in the area. If for all the latest in local sports, if you want the schedule for all the teams here in North Central Kansas, you can always visit ncksports.com.
All right, tonight on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com, Republic County comes to Beloit in a league doubleheader. Republic County with perhaps only six girls available to play tonight, and they're, for the most part, all underclassmen. The boys' game, Republic County off their 3-1 start, and their three wins by a combined 10 points. Beloit 1-2 on the season. Let's start with the girls' game. Shauna Remus, her team, looking to bounce back, get on the winning track after two tough matchups last week against Clay Center and Southeast of Saline.
We know Clay Center, Southeast is a tough two in a row, and we're hoping to bounce back on this and get home and just keep improving every game we can, every practice we can.
Public County really struggling, averaging 17 points a game and really in a tough spot. They had some girls that started last year. It didn't go out this year. They're just really up against it, and quite honestly, they could easily be playing JV instead of varsity, and I think that is a tough spot that those girls that went out are dealing with, because do you get better by playing varsity when you're not ready for varsity, or do you just play a JV? And if you did that, well, then that causes all kinds of problems for your league schools, as we see already with the Stockton boys not having a basketball program. That causes all kinds of problems too. So as of now, Republic County is still playing varsity games on the girls' side, but the Beloit girls will have a huge advantage tonight. On the boys' side, that game should be more competitive. Republic County and Beloit played twice back-to-back on a Friday and a Tuesday because of COVID this past season. Beloit won both those meetings, one by 14, the other by 20. Beloit has everybody back from last year, although they are missing a starter from last year out with an injury this season in Jackson Rexroth. Public County, they got some size. Blake Ahrens averaging a double-double. He's been a beast so far this year, 6'4 inside. They also got 6'3 kid named Bates. Their guard play has been a little bit susceptible to turnovers, and they've also dealt with injuries. They got a kid back on Friday that had been out with a broken hip, so that helps them add a little bit more depth. Ryan Eilert, the head coach of the Beloit Trojans, on the keys against the Buffaloes tonight, an experienced squad they'll be facing.
Republic County is a senior group. Got everybody back from a year ago. They've made strides from a year ago. We've got to come out with intensity and not take a step backwards to where, you know, we think, oh, you know, we played Southeast on Friday. It'll be different on Tuesday. We've got to be a group that starts to maintain and drive things. And right now, I think we do a lot of reacting to what other teams do and not forcing the issue.
So, Beloit and Republic County tonight, Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com, live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. And also tonight, Dust will have St. John's Tipton hosting Rock Hills. Girls and boys doubleheader, Jamie Harvey, head coach of Rock Hills Girls on St. John's Tipton.
They're always going to pressure us. They're always going to, you know, give us their best effort. And again, if we play well and continue to grow and have that defensive and offensive mind to hold people down and us being able to score, it'll be a good game, I suppose.
And Leah Bergman, head coach of the Blue Jays on Rock Hills.
They're an athletic group. They were athletic last year, and they gave us some trouble last year, so I expect that to be even more so this year. You know, I know our girls are excited to play at home and in front of fans for the first time in what seems like forever. But, you know, I expect it to be another tough game. I want our girls to come out focused and ready to play.
So the girls' game tonight, Dusty, you'll have on Z96.3 Lake.
Yeah, kind of looking, you know, St. John's Tipton probably a favorite in this one, but maybe not as much as they have been in the past. You know, they're starting this this journey without Lauren Dubert, who'd been there for the last 4 years, really playing varsity and starting the last three for sure. And so they're learning as they go without her and trying to find different players that can step into the lineup and do good things for them. So, Jenna Gangler's a sophomore, has had a 15-point game this year. And Paige Hollerick and Leah Brummer are there too. That really were pretty good last year and made the all-league team as well. So it's not an empty cupboard there for St. John's Tipton. They're 2-2 to start. They played had a couple really tough games there at the Morris Classic. Rock Hills, led by Lauren Welchel this year, as they have been over the last couple of years, and just looking for other people to step up offensively for them after graduating a couple key seniors as well. So really looking forward to this matchup just to kind of see where both teams are at this point. Get a live look at them and see. But St. John's Tipton, I would say, would probably have the edge, especially at home. For the first time, like Leah said, in front of fans there for a while here.
All right, the boys game coming up after that one tonight over in Beloit. Lance Bergman, head coach of the Blue Jays, on facing Rock Hills. Just wanting to improve game by game.
The big thing is just continue to improve, work on our fundamentals, make sure we're playing good, sound defense, make sure we limit the amount of possessions they get, try to make it a little bit more of a fast-paced game, you know, and just take care of the basketball and make good decisions. We're looking forward to the opportunity to play at home and hopefully get another win and get momentum going into the last game of the 2021 year and just be excited going into Christmas break.
And Rock Hills first-year head coach Zach Duffy on the matchup of the Blue Jays.
Got a little bit of film on them. They get up and down the floor really well. They got a lot of good athletes. I know that number five, that Eitzman kid, I think is his name, real good athlete, good shooter. So that's going to be a big challenge for us and another stepping stone that we need to experience. And we need to play those good teams because that only ends up making you better in the end.
Rock Hill, St. John's Tipton tonight on Z96.3 Lake. Online, katycountry94.com. Get the free Z96.3 Lake app on your smartphones as well. And Dusty, thoughts on the boys' game?
Yeah, I mean, this is St. John's Tipton's a heavy favorite in this one. 3-1 coming in. Rock Hill's still learning a lot about themselves. 0-3. This is a crazy stat, and it's kind of, you mention it because you can tell why they're struggling a little bit to start the season. They had 7 points returning from last year in varsity, not per game. They had 7 points returning from varsity last year. So they're learning a lot as they go here this year, Rock Hills is. And, you know, St. John's Tipton has a lot of guys back with a lot of varsity experience and will definitely be the favorite here tonight. So looking forward again, though, to seeing, you know, maybe some of the progress that Rock Hills can have throughout this season under Coach Duffy in his first year there. And Coach Bergman obviously has a good crew again this year, finishing off with a win over Ulysses on Saturday there at Russell. So feeling pretty good about themselves after the 2-1 finish at Russell. And we're looking forward to seeing how that one plays out as well here tonight on Z96.3.
All right, as always, latest sports information right there, NCKSSports.com. Latest athletes of the week, all the all-league selections, all-state football, much more there, NCKSSports.com. All right, COVID-19 impact in NFL again. There have been more positive tests in many cases with players that had been vaccinated for the Chiefs. Josh Gordon, who just had his first touchdown catch of his career with the Chiefs, he tested positive COVID-19 despite being vaccinated. And so he could still play on Thursday against the Chargers. And by the way, the Chargers, their rookie offensive tackle, Rashawn Slater, who's been outstanding this year, he also was placed on a reserve COVID-19 list yesterday after he, too, tested positive COVID-19. Chargers had some issues with COVID. Keenan Allen missed the last game for them. Mike Williams had been a close contact as well, their other outstanding wide receiver. But both Gordon and Slater have a chance to play Thursday night if they have two negative tests 24 hours apart. As for the rest of the Chiefs, in regards to injuries, Chris Jones with an ankle, Andrew Wiley with a knee, Darrell Williams with a quad, all practiced yesterday. Nick Bolton, Derek Nnadi, Rashad Fenton, and Lucas Niang were limited. Tyrann Mathieu did not practice, but that was not due to an injury. And Ladarius Sneed remains with family following the murder of his oldest brother in Louisiana on Friday night. The Chiefs have not said when he will return to the team. And COVID not just impacting the NFL, NBA, the Chicago Bulls have been hit hard. They've had two games postponed this week because they have 10 players sidelined with COVID-19. So the Bulls will not be playing any games this week as they have 10 players sidelined with COVID-19. Obviously, it's hard to put together a team if you're missing that many. So we'll continue to follow that story as well. Well, Deuce Vaughn has earned first-team All-America honors from the Associated Press. The sophomore running back is an All-American as an all-purpose player. He is the first Wildcat since Jordy Nelson in 2007 to be a first-teamer by the AP. He is the first Wildcat freshman or sophomore to be named an Associated Press first-team All-American since David Allen earned that nod as a punt returner in 1998. And Vaughn enters the bowl season ranked fifth in the nation in scrimmage yards per game. He is one of only two players with 1,000 rushing yards and 400 receiving yards this season. He has 1,258 rushing yards, 471 receiving yards so far this year. And he is already listed as one of the possibilities to win the Heisman next year as a junior. So stay tuned for that as K-State gets an All-American there with Deuce Vaughn, well-deserved. And if you bring in a quarterback, if you don't believe Will Howard's the answer, at least initially next year, you bring in a Bo Nix or you bring in an Adrian Martinez, perhaps Vaughn would thrive even more. Who knows? We shall see. Time will tell on that. Speaking of quarterbacks that are in the transfer portal, Spencer Rattler has found a new home. It will not be at K-State, which we said it wouldn't, but we just said, you know, you kick the tires. The Oklahoma starting quarterback will transfer to South Carolina. The redshirt sophomore announced yesterday on Twitter. He reunites with Gamecocks head coach Shane Beamer, a former Sooners assistant in Columbia. Rattler entered the season as a preseason Heisman favorite, presumed first-round pick for the 2022 NFL draft after a strong 2020 season. However, the offense for Oklahoma struggled this year, combined with just 39 points and wins over Nebraska and West Virginia, and with the Sooners down double digits to Texas. In October, Rattler was benched in favor of backup and freshman Caleb Williams, who led the biggest comeback in the history of the rivalry. Williams has started the rest of the season. Rattler's numbers actually aren't too bad, considering what he did to Oklahoma. He completed 75% of his passes, almost 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions, but not enough points for the Oklahoma offense, and Rattler was benched, and Williams took over. So Spencer Rattler is going to be a new quarterback, or at least he's going to South Carolina to compete when it comes to South Carolina's starting quarterback spot, but a good pickup for South Carolina. And I remember when Rattler announced he was transferring, we talked about the SEC, where would teams, what schools would make sense, and we mentioned South Carolina would be a spot that might make sense to Spencer Rattler, and that's exactly where he's going. So thoughts on Rattler going to South Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good spot for him. It's not a high-profile place. You know, I think it's probably a place that he can go in and probably win the job. I don't know what South Carolina's got at quarterback right now or what they've got coming in, but you would think that's a good opportunity for him to get the starting position and go with that and see what he can do in the SEC because, you know, I don't know. He probably would want to go to a more high-profile spot than South Carolina is at this moment in juncture, but
right.
He also probably would have to compete a little harder for the starting job at a more high-profile spot.
Well, and maybe, you know, you're highly touted coming in as a top recruit going to Oklahoma. A change of scenery will help, and then there won't be as much pressure, obviously,
exactly.
At South Carolina, so it makes some sense. The college top 25 basketball poll has been released. As we predicted yesterday, Baylor is the new number one. We'll see how long that lasts because number one has been a bit of a jinx. And Baylor received all of the 61 first place votes by the AP, and well deserved. They're 9-0. Duke is number 2. Purdue number 3. They go from 1 to 3. UCLA is 4. Gonzaga is 5. Alabama is 6. Which is interesting because Gonzaga has 2 losses and Alabama beat Gonzaga head to head and they have 1 loss. I'm confused. But whatever. Kansas is ranked 7th ahead of undefeated Arizona. Kansas has lost to a 2-3 Dayton team at the time, and Arizona's undefeated. Why is Kansas ahead of Arizona again? I mean, let's be objective here.
Villanova
is 7-3. They're number 9. Iowa State and USC are 10-0, and they're ranked behind Villanova. But I will say, Villanova's lost to Gonzaga. They lost to Baylor. And was it UCLA? I mean, they played 3 really outstanding
teams.
Yeah,
I think it was UCLA.
Iowa State's undefeated, picked to finish dead last in the Big 12. They were picked to finish 10th. They're 11th in the country now at 10-0 under a new head coach. So the early returns are good there. And Texas is now up to number 17. And Texas Tech cracks the top 25 at number 25. Oklahoma and West Virginia also receive votes. So there's a lot of talk about the SEC is the toughest conference in America when it comes to basketball, and I'm like, please stop. The Big 12 very well might be the best conference in America. Let's not start sitting here and telling everybody the SEC is great at everything. The SEC does have some really good teams, but I saw Kentucky just lose at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was 3-4. So Alabama's a good team. They lost to Iona, and KU beat Iona by 20. So
Arkansas just got dominated.
Arkansas
this
got
weekend.
Rolled by Oklahoma. So when I look at the SEC, Alabama is the only one in the top 10. You've got Baylor at 1, Kansas 7, Iowa State 11. So I think the Big 12, at least the top half of their conferences, is still better than the SEC. But it doesn't really matter. They'll decide it on the court at the end with the tournament. What a concept. And allow the little guys and the big guys to play all in one tournament and crown an actual national champion. Wonder if football could do that someday. That'd be great. If you thought you had a bad day when it came to sports, Carver College says, hold my beer. Did you see what happened in women's basketball
yesterday? I didn't see all the details, but I saw the score and the margin of victory.
Georgia Southern beat Carver College yesterday 133-15 in women's basketball. It is the second largest margin of victory in women's Division I history. The margin of 118 points trails the record of 129 set by Savannah State when they beat Wesleyan of Georgia 155-26 in November of 2018. The women's record for a game involving two Division I teams is 108 points when Baylor women beat Winthrop 140-32 back in December of 2016. So Carver College losing 133-15 to Georgia Southern yesterday in women's basketball. Ouch, babe.
Ouch.
Ouch. NBA, Steph Curry last night with 5 3-pointers. The Warriors got by the Pacers 102-100. Curry now with 2,927 3-pointers. He's 2 triples shy of breaking Ray Allen's career NBA record. And the next stop for him will be Madison Square Garden against the Knicks. So more than likely, he's going to set the record there at the Mecca for NBA basketball, according to some. Madison Square Garden, where we've seen some amazing performances over the years at Madison Square Garden by many superstars. And maybe Steph will light it up with 15 threes. I don't know. But he just needs 2 to break the record, and he's going to do it in about 500 less games than Ray Allen.
That's insane when you really think about it. Like, you're talking about, I mean, obviously you're talking about the greatest three-point shooter ever in Ray Allen, and you just, like, breeze past him, and now the record is just going to be out of reach almost. Somebody might come and do something, but, man, that's going to be –
I don't know if he plays another –
that'll be tough.
If he plays another 3 or 4 years, I think that'll be tough to reach. Well, you know, every record is breakable, I guess.
Yeah.
Cavaliers beat the Heat last night in NBA 105-94. The Cavs are 17-12. They have a better record than the Heat. We mentioned the Warriors are 22-5. Steph with 5 threes, 26 points last night in the win over the Pacers. The Raptors rolled the Kings 124-101. It was the Rockets over the Hawks 132-126. The Hawks are under 500, 13-14. Trae Young had 41 in a losing effort. Jason Tatum had 42, and the Celtics a much needed win. They knock off the Bucks 117-103. Giannis held to 20. The Grizzlies blow out the Sixers 126-91. The Mavericks beat the Hornets 120-96. The Mavericks are only a game over 500. The Nuggets are only a game over 500. Nikola Jokic was on his way to a huge triple-double and got ejected. He had 28 points, 19 rebounds, 9 assists. Nuggets beat the Wizards 113 to 107. And the Suns, they're human. The Suns lost at the Clippers last night 111 to 95. Clippers 16 and 12. They've been playing without, of course, Kawhi Leonard. Paul George has missed some games as well, but they're holding down the fort. And the Suns are now 21 and 5. So the Warriors have a one-game lead in the Western Conference when it comes to the NBA playoff standings, which, of course, we are a long, long way off from the playoffs. The NBA is a very, 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 very long season. Not as long as baseball, but still pretty long. Okay, let's talk about the Chiefs for a moment. We'll discuss Chiefs more and the Chargers coming up tomorrow with Danny Welniak. She'll join us from KCTV 5 in Kansas City to preview the big matchup between the Chargers and the Chiefs. So my oldest son and I were talking about this on the couch last night, and he said, man, if the Chiefs win this game on Thursday, that division is over, isn't it? And I said, yeah, pretty much. If the Chargers win, he goes, they'd have the tiebreaker, right? I said, yeah. I said, you know, the thing is, the Chiefs, I still could see the Chiefs losing this game and winning the division. They still have, they would have to finish a game ahead of the Chargers because they would have lost both games head-to-head. And, you know, that loss to the Chargers is actually a bigger loss than the loss to the Ravens because now they're ahead of the Ravens in the standings. And, yes, they're ahead of the Chargers. But if they lose to the Chargers coming up on Thursday, well, then, of course, the Chargers have the tiebreaker and we have the inside track to win the division. And that's why division games are so important. You lose to, I mean, a division game is worth two. Simple as that. It's worth two. I mean, think about it. The Chiefs had four turnovers in that game and lost 30-24, and it took the Chargers a late drive when the Chiefs threw an interception on an ill-advised pass by Patrick Mahomes, so he didn't trust his defense at the time. And Chargers had the short field, ended up going for the touchdown instead of settling for a field goal, and then the Chiefs got the ball back late in that game. Chiefs are minus four in the turnover margin. Chargers had the last-minute drive to win 30-24. And the Chiefs are right now 9-4, and the Chargers 8-5. If the Chiefs would have won that game, which they could have, I mean, if they just don't turn the ball over, they do. The Chiefs would have been, and that was when their defense wasn't playing that well. The Chiefs would have been today 10-3, and the Chargers would be 7-6. And they would go into this game Thursday night going, ah, we win, great, we don't, we're still good, unless you, of course, want the number one overall seed. But they did lose that game, so there's more pressure on the Chiefs to win this game against the Chargers. When you look at the Chiefs in the last six games, defensively they have been outstanding. But let's look at who they've played. All right, the Giants with Daniel Jones and the Giants were beat up on the offensive line. The Packers, Aaron Rodgers didn't play, out with COVID. The Raiders twice, and we know that they had no Henry Ruggs, and Darren Waller played two of the eight possible quarters. The Cowboys had no Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb missed the second half. Ezekiel Elliott was banged up. The Cowboys are missing a couple of linemen. And the Broncos are just not very good offensively. I'm not saying this to put down the Chiefs' defense. What I'm saying is this will be the ultimate measuring stick of how far this defense has come on Thursday. Because the Chargers can run the ball okay, but they've got a quarterback that can make you pay. And we just saw him throw it 165 yards in the air for a touchdown against the Giants. He scrambles. He's mobile. He can get away from a pass rush. He's more mobile than Teddy Bridgewater, more mobile than Derek Carr, more mobile than Dak Prescott, obviously more experienced than Jordan Love and Daniel Jones. So this is the best quarterback the Chiefs are going to face the rest of the year. They got Big Ben, and he's not very mobile anymore. You got Joe Burrow, who doesn't have a great offensive line. And Burrow's a good quarterback, don't get me wrong. I like him. And then you get Bridgewater again in Denver. And you look at the Chiefs this year against the really good quarterbacks. Well, Lamar Jackson had a really good game against the Chiefs. That was week two. I know the Chiefs are different. Herbert had a very good game in week three. Jalen Hurts lit up the Chiefs' defense. Josh Allen had a big game. And then really no quarterbacks had a big game since, but the Chiefs haven't gone up against a great quarterback since either because they caught a break when Rodgers was out with the COVID. So to me, I'm not saying the Chiefs' defense isn't better. I think it definitely is better. But I'm not convinced it's 10 points per game that good.
Yeah.
I mean, 65 points in six games is impressive, don't get me wrong. But it's not like they've been playing the Tom Brady's, the Russell Wilson's, the Lamar Jackson's, the Josh Allen's, the what's another great quarterback? I'm trying to think of another really good quarterback. The Matt Stafford's, the Kyler Murray's. The last 6 weeks, they have not. The best quarterback in that six-week stretch, in you would have to say, is Dak Prescott. And he was missing one and a half of his weapons because Lamb was out the second half. And the defense did play very well, don't get me wrong. But the Chargers supposed to have Keenan Allen back on Thursday after he missed the last game of COVID. And then Mike Williams, it looks like they're going to be good to go. I mean, yeah, every team has somebody they're usually missing. Chiefs might be without L'Jarius Sneed, which could be big in this game on Thursday. But for me, I know the Chiefs defense has improved, but I'm not buying that it's that good.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the statistically it's true. They're only giving up 10 points a game the last six games. I get that. But there is no way the Chiefs defense holds the Chargers to 10 on Thursday.
No.
If they do, then I'm completely bought in. Because if they hold the Chargers to 10 or even 17, I will be super impressed. And one of the big reasons why the Chiefs have done better is, of course, they get more of a pass rush. And what's happened when you get more of a pass rush? You get more turnovers. That's just as simple as that. When you get a pass rush, you're forcing quarterback into bad decisions. They got three fumbles the other day. They forced three fumbles, and they were forced. I mean, Mike Hughes punched the one out. It was a great play. Jerron Reed punched one out. And then they got a pick on a deflection. They are forcing turnovers. And what happens is when you get pressure and you are a faster, more aggressive defense, which the Chiefs are, with Willie Gay on the field now instead of Hitchens as much, when you got Thornhill instead of Sorensen, when you got Sneed playing the slot, when you got Melvin Ingram at defensive end instead of Mike Dana, you're just more athletic. And Jones moving inside, and Clark is healthy on the other side. So I buy in that they're better. There's no doubt they're better, and I like what I see. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're going to shut down the Chargers Thursday night. I think the Charger-Chiefs game Thursday is going to be back to one of those 31-24, 35-28 type of games. I could be wrong. It might end up being a defensive battle, and the Chiefs win 17-13. But Herbert is much better than any of these quarterbacks they faced the last 6 weeks. The exception would be Prescott, who's very good, and I think Herbert's better than Prescott too. But Prescott's a very good quarterback, but he was missing some weapons. Herbert's not missing weapons as of now, today, going in, except he could be missing his offensive tackle, which is a big loss for him. But he's going to have his receivers and running backs, it appears, for Thursday.
Yeah, 17 would be the number that I'd be looking at, too. Like, you're not going to –
Listen, I'd take 20-21.
Yeah, I mean, I would take that, right? But if to for me to have the Chiefs prove that, right, that they're this kind of defense that's giving up 10 points a game or whatever right now.
Right.
You know, if they can hold the Chargers to 17 or less, then I'll really buy them as one of the best defenses in the league
me
right
too.
Now. And, but, you know, I'll take – 21, 24, whatever. You know, it's a offense that's very, very difficult to stop if they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll be interesting to see. And then on the short week, how they can do that as well and get themselves recovered and ready to go. I think it helps if they had a blowout win against the Raiders. Maybe didn't tax them as much late in the game and maybe they can recover quicker. I don't know if that's the case or not. But, I think if you can hold them down, anything under 20 is gravy if you're holding the Chargers down to that. So, but yeah, you gotta go out and prove it. And we talk about that. It seems like we talk about that every year with the Chiefs. Like they live a charmed life. Like they're playing backup quarterbacks or you know whoever they're playing. And but it hasn't seemed to matter over the last few years anyway. When you get to the postseason and are playing the good teams, so we'll see if they can keep that trend going and keep going in the right direction.
I'll tell you what worries me is when the national media jumps on the wagon trying to tell me how great the Chiefs defense is after they were just ripping it left and right. And that's called fair weather media people. That's how it rolls. They overreact when it was so bad. And they've overreacting now that they've been so good. Yeah. And it's usually somewhere in the middle. And that's what worries me because, listen, if you were not a Chiefs fan and you wanted to poke holes at the Chiefs, I mean, I'd just be objective. Chiefs Kingdom, listen to me for a moment. If I'm a Bronco or Raider fan, here's what I would say. And granted, the Chiefs have beaten the Raiders, pummeled them, and the Chiefs beat the Broncos, honestly, when they didn't even play that well. But if I'm a Bronco or if I'm a Charger fan right now, I'm sitting here going, I'm not scared of your defense. I mean, your defense is good, don't get me wrong, but I'm sitting here going, okay, so you play Daniel Jones and no Saquon Barkley, and Daniel Jones is banged up, and the Giants are missing three of their starting offensive linemen, and you barely won.
Yeah.
And that was a home. Then you played the Packers. You scored 13 points. You won 13-7, and that was against Jordan Love, his first ever start in the league, no Aaron Rodgers. you play the Raiders that after they lost Henry Ruggs to the horrible accident that he caused and after their coach resigned abruptly, you didn't play the Raiders when they were good early in the year either time. So you caught them perfect timing. The Cowboys you caught perfectly because the Cowboys are missing, I think, one or two starting offensive linemen. Elliott was banged up. They were missing Amari Cooper, and they were missing CeeDee Lamb in the second half of that game. So you can poke a hole in that as well. Then you can say the Broncos are just not good offensively. It's as simple as that. They're just not. And then you get the Raiders again. So if you're a Charger fan, you're like, why am I going to get super scared of your defense? Like, now, the comeback, if you're a Chiefs fan, is this. Listen, our defense sucked early in the year in week 3 at home, and we still held you to 30 points, and you had 4 turnovers from our offense.
Yeah.
I mean, you really think about it, the Chiefs defense did a pretty good job in that game. That was one of their better defensive performances. Yeah. I remember they held the Chargers scoreless, I think, in the first quarter. It was the offense that kept turning the ball over because the offense would go move the ball between the 20s, but then they'd turn it over in the red zone. That was a game that probably was as frustrating as any of them the Chiefs have lost this year because the defense actually gave the offense a chance. So if you look at that and then you say the defense has improved, and LA is not a real full home field advantage, you know, there are going to be a lot of Chiefs fans there even on Thursday night. The short week helps the Chargers a lot because they sit and relax in their own beds, and the Chiefs have the short week after playing the Raiders. But so there's arguments from both sides when you look at it and can say, listen, and the Chargers can say, well, we're better than we were in week 3. I don't know. The Chargers were cooking pretty good early in the year. Then they had a downfall, had some injuries, and now they're back on track, it appears. So it is interesting when you look at it from both perspectives. The Chargers might not be as great as some people think they are, and the Chiefs defense might not be as good as they've looked based on who they played the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to find out a lot more on Thursday about both teams, clearly.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, the Chargers lose this game, they might be in a dogfight to make the playoffs.
Uh-huh.
The Chargers win the game, and now the Chiefs are suddenly going to be like, okay, we might be a wild card.
Yeah.
So it's a huge game.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot that hinges on this, so you got to come out and be playing the top of your game ready to go.
No doubt. Now, I want to pull something up. When I had somebody ask me yesterday about what are the chances of the Chiefs getting the number 1 overall seed in the AFC, and the chances aren't bad, but the Chiefs have to jump 2 teams in order to be the number 1 seed. Right now, they're the 3 seed. So assuming the Chiefs would win out. And let's be honest, if the Chiefs beat the Chargers, why can't they win out? Well, Steelers at home, Bengals on the road, that'll be a tough game, don't get me wrong. At Denver, I think you expect them to beat Denver. So, and that's if there's anything on the line. Maybe not. Maybe you got 1 seed wrapped up, or you can't get the 1, so you're locked. You know, well, you're obviously going to have something to play for if you win your next 3 games, you're 12-4 going into that game. Because the Patriots are, unless the Patriots and Titans just fall apart. So when you look at the schedules of the Titans, the Patriots, and the Chiefs, those are the 3 you need to worry about for the number 1 seed. Assuming the Chiefs run the table, they're 13-4. But they have to have the Titans lose a game because the Chiefs lost to the Titans head-to-head.
Yeah.
So here's what the Titans have left. And remember, no Derrick Henry, and don't know if he'll be back for the playoffs or not. The Titans schedule at Pittsburgh, which is not a gimme win.
Mm-hmm.
They host San Francisco. Listen, if this team can lose to Houston at home, San Francisco ain't going to be easy. Miami at home, the Dolphins have won 5 in a row. They were off this week, weren't they? They're 6-7. They still have a lot to play for. And at the Texans, a team they lost to at home. Do we think the Titans are going to run the table and win 4 in a row to go 13-4? I don't.
I think they'll lose one of those.
Okay, so if they lose one and the Chiefs win out, Titans are taken care of, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say the Titans are checked off the list. The Chiefs run the table. They're 13-4, which is going to be tough because that means the Chiefs win 10 in a row to end the season. That's highly unlikely in regards to probability. But let's just play that game for now.
They have done it before.
They have done it before. Yes, sir, they have. They're 1-5, lost Jamal Charles, won 10 in a row, went to the playoffs, and won a playoff game that year against Brian Hoyer. The Patriots schedule, here's what they have remaining. At the Colts, that's a huge game for the Colts. Big game for the Patriots. The Patriots coming off a bye, a couple of great wins against Tennessee and then Buffalo. That's a huge game for the Chiefs to get a 1 seed. And then the Patriots host Buffalo, which I still think if that game would have been decent weather, the Bills would have beat the Patriots.
Yeah, but, I agree with that.
So, but this one will be in Foxborough, so who knows there. Then the Patriots have Jacksonville at home. That's a win. And then at Miami, and isn't this interesting? If you just go back to the year the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, what happened the final week of the regular season?
The Dolphins beat the Patriots
in Miami.
In Miami,
and the Chiefs won against the Chargers, and the Chiefs got the number one seed. Yes. Yeah. It'd be the same setup. Can you imagine?
It's a different team the Chiefs would have to beat.
True. It'd be the Broncos on the road. Can you imagine the Chiefs and the Patriots are 12-4 going in the final week of the regular season? Because I'm pretty sure the Patriots have the tiebreaker. Chiefs win at Denver, and the Chiefs play the late game. So they would know going to Denver game whether they had to win that for the one seed or not. If they don't, and they say they have the two seed locked up, then the Chiefs could rest their people against Denver, and if they lose, it might not matter. That's something to keep in mind as well. But, okay, so you look at the Patriots' schedule, assuming the Chiefs are on the table, which is a pretty big assumption, you know. But let's say the Chiefs are 13-4. The Patriots 9-4, and as I said, I'm pretty sure they have the tiebreaker. Well, I know they do because they're up in the standings now at 9-4. They have they've lost to the Cowboys and Buccaneers. That's the opposing conference. It goes by conference record. The Chiefs' losses have been, let's think about it. They've lost to the Chargers. They've lost to the Titans. They lost to the Ravens and the Bills. All four losses are in conference. So the Chiefs have to.
Teams.
The Chiefs will not catch the Patriots more than likely for the tiebreaker. So the Chiefs, in essence, have to be a game ahead of Tennessee and New England to be the number one seed. So the Chiefs more than likely have to win out, and they need the Titans to lose a game, which we both think they will, and they need the Patriots to lose a game. So you tell me, at Indianapolis, home to Buffalo, home to Jacksonville, at Miami, do the New England Patriots finish 13-4, or do you see them losing a game of those four?
I think they're going to lose at least one of those.
Okay, which one do you think is going to be the toughest or hardest or the one more most likely to lose? I would say the Colts.
That's where I was leaning.
The very next game.
So either Colts or Bills for me, obviously.
Sure. I think Miami's a dangerous team at the end if they have something to play for.
Yeah. But Colts would be probably the first one on the list just the way they're playing, and probably the Bills second.
That's a Saturday night game coming up in week 15. This Saturday, actually, on the 18th, because we got now some of the holiday games close to Christmas. You have some Saturday night prime time now that no college football is going on, which is smart by the NFL.
Yeah.
So the Patriots have just a shorter week, but they have coming off a bye, so they'll be all right. I mean, you look at this, there is a very decent path to being the one seed after starting your 3-4, and people and Chiefs people that jumped off the wagon. We're not going to play good at playoffs. We're not any good anymore. We got to blow this thing up. And now, you know, here we are 6 weeks later. Hey, we might get the number one seed and get a bye. That's why you got to just chill a little bit, chillax.
People will forget about the 3-4 start real quick when you're playing
like this.
Don't they?
Oh, I knew all along the Chiefs defense is going to get better. Nobody saw
Nobody
this coming.
Knew that.
Nobody saw no. this improvement coming. And then the offense, the struggle, as long as they have, nobody really saw that either. I mean, I think a lot of people thought defense would get better, but the offense would get a lot better. And they quit turning it over and just keep scoring a lot. That's what I thought. And it hasn't happened. Although I do think the Chiefs have, because their defense has been better, Andy Reid and the Chiefs offense has known, let's be a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, they've turned it over a lot less, but the big plays and the things that you're used to with the Chiefs haven't been there consistently.
Right.
Two games against the Raiders, they've dominated, but other than that, that was helped out by a lot of defense, especially the last game against the Raiders. But, yeah, they've definitely at least stopped turning the ball over as much and probably making the not smart plays, we'll call it, like what Mahomes was doing earlier in the season. He's kind of cut down on some of that.
Most teams this year against the Chiefs have run two high safeties. They're taking away the deep stuff. The Raiders, in both games, played one high safety for a good percentage of the snaps, and the Chiefs destroyed them.
Yeah.
So why would you not run two high safeties? That's another reason why the Raiders are just, what are you doing? I mean, the two high safety look has given the Chiefs more problems than the one high safety look. Why? And the Raiders got ran out of the gym, out of the field in Vegas, and yet went with pretty much the same game plan in round two. Thank you.
Yes.
But do you think do you think the Chiefs are going to see one high safety most of the game on Thursday against the Chargers? I'll bet you they don't.
No.
I'll bet you they see two high safeties, which take what the defense gives you and don't force it. And then Mecole Hardman, don't fumble the ball. And Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, catch the ball so we don't have these deflections into the air. I mean, you think about the Chiefs' turnovers. I'm not trying to make excuses for Mahomes, but five of his 11 interceptions are drop passes that went into the air.
Yeah.
So people talk about, oh, all these. And by the way, if I hear another person tell me that Mahomes is so lucky because look at all the interceptions that get negated by penalty, I'll bet you half of the ones he throws is when he already knows he has a free play because the other team jumps off sides. He can see the flag out of the corner of his eye. He knows he has a free play. And duh, you throw it up. Who cares if it's intercepted? The Chiefs did that in this last game. He got Raiders to jump, and he threw the ball in the triple coverage, and it was almost intercepted. And it was, I think, to Kelce. And guess what? Who cares? He knew he had a free play. And that's the beauty of Mahomes. He's like, dude, if you give me a free play, I'm going to go for a pass interference.
Yeah.
I'm not checking it down. He never checks it down on that situation. He's going to force it. And why wouldn't you? If you know that you got the penalty in a free play, you absolutely go for the deep shot. And if there's six guys around Kelce, throw it up. You might get pass interference. That's better than the 5 yard offsides. And if it's picked, it's negated. And if Kelce goes up and high points it and scores a touchdown, well, that's better than taking the 5 yard offsides penalty.
Yeah.
And there's so many people that don't watch Chiefs football at all, and they go, "We get so lucky." Think about there have been so many interceptions that he's thrown that's been negated by penalty. He's so lucky. Half of them are he don't care because he already knows you're offsides. It's a free play. You're stupid not to try to throw it down the field when you know you have a free play. Why would you check down for 7 yards when you already got five on the penalty? Why not throw it deep? I mean, you should automatically do that. Automatically. Throw it to your best athletic receiver, whether it's Kelce, Josh Gordon, Hardman, Tyreek Hill. Go let them try to make a play. And if they don't, big whoop. You got the ball 5 yards closer to a first down. It's just amazing to me how many people, Mahomes throws a lot of interceptions, but he gets lucky because it's called back due to penalty. Half of those, I would say, are those type of plays where he knows I've got 5 yards. That shouldn't count against Mahomes at all. But there are people that are not smart enough to add 2 + 2 = 5, apparently, that can't figure that out. But a lot of people that say that are people that don't watch the game.
Yeah.
They do have no idea what they're talking about, which is always great. When you have no idea what you're talking about but act like you're an expert on something, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's like me yesterday. I didn't sit here I even told you twice. I'm no race car expert. I could tell you enough about Formula One because I watched this Netflix series, so I know a little bit more than some regular person in sports, but I don't know anything close to what regular race car fans know about Formula One or NASCAR. I don't pretend I do. Because I think if I did, it'd be very clear I don't.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when I see people talking about, well, Mahomes is overrated, or Mahomes is just a product of the system, or Mahomes would be nothing without Hill or Kelce, or Mahomes gets lucky with all the interceptions that are dropped, or all the interceptions that are called back due to penalty. Yeah, that's funny, but you don't point out all the drop passes that popped in the air and were picked this year. You could argue it's evened out a little bit, because last year he only threw, what, 6 picks? This year he's thrown 11 or 12? Okay, there's the extra 5 or 6 because he's got Pro Bowl receivers that dropped the ball right off their hands. He's put it right in their hands. Now, granted, he's had some really dumb decisions, a couple of boneheaded interceptions, no doubt about it. Not saying he's perfect. But when you're going to put this whole thing together about, well, he gets lucky because the penalties negate this, and he gets lucky because the linebacker dropped the interception. Well, in fairness, let's look at both sides. Maybe that's called karma and it evens out because of all the balls have been dropped that have popped in the air and that have been intercepted. Like, Derek Carr got credit for an interception when his receiver, a tight end, dropped the ball and he tipped it into the air and Matthew intercepted it.
Yeah.
Is that Derek Carr's fault? Should that even count as interception on his stats? No. Absolutely not. Now, I will say it's probably fair. Because how many times does a receiver go make a sensational catch on a throw thrown low, high, or behind, and the quarterback gets credit for yards after catch to his passing yardage? You know, the old shovel pass forward to the guy in motion counts as a pass. That's ridiculous. I mean, technically it's a pass, but Mahomes has gotten probably 10 or 15 of those in his career that pad his stats a little bit. So in fairness, I understand the whole gamut of the criticism or looking at padding stats. A lot of guys do it. And for those that criticize Mahomes and say, well, he's a product of the system and he's got these great players and what would he be without these guys? Well, duh. Go back and look at every NFL Super Bowl champion, all right? Go by year by year. I could even pull it up. Dusty could even pull it up. Let's do it for fun. Pull up the Super Bowl champions since 2010. Just do 2010. The last 11 years, okay? The last Super Bowl champions, start with 2010, and let's go ahead and create this exercise for people. All right, who was the Super Bowl champion 2010?
It's almost here.
All right, it's almost here. Christmas is almost here. It's 11 days away. Yeah. That's a very good point, Dusty. Dusty likes to wear his Santa hat sometimes during holidays here at the station.
All the time, if I'm
absolutely
out in public or anything like
well,
that.
Well, sure, covers up the thinning hairline. I get it.
Exactly.
No doubt.
New Orleans Saints, or the Colts, excuse me.
The Colts in 2010.
Or no, the Saints beat the Colts, yes.
Okay, the Saints in 2010. did Drew Brees do that all by himself?
No.
No, he had, I'm trying to think what wide receiver he had that was really good that year. He had a stud receiver, I know that.
Was it Colston that year?
I don't remember.
I can't remember how far back they were there.
He also had a good defense that year, too. Okay, 2011.
Packers.
Okay. Jordy. Do you think okay, Aaron Rodgers? Well, he wouldn't have won the Super Bowl without Jordy Nelson. Duh. I mean, yeah. Okay. So see, he needed somebody next year.
The Giants.
Oh my goodness! That the year they beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a defense. I mean, there Eli Manning. He didn't win that without David Tyree catching one on his helmet. Okay. And oh yeah, the defense got a pass rush on Brady and ruined their season. So yeah,
did that actually be the Manningham one?
Oh, okay, that's the Manningham
the
one.
Time, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
on the near sideline.
Yeah,
unbelievable catch.
Yeah, and but still just 17 points given up by the defense.
Did Eli Manning single handedly win that game?
No.
Okay.
The 49ers and Ravens were the next year, so the Ravens won that.
Yeah. Well, the Ravens. The Joe Flacco was the quarterback. Do you think he wins that without Ray Lewis?
No. I mean, he doesn't win it without his special teams getting a touchdown. And
yeah, Ed Reed doesn't win it without Ed Reed. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
Seahawks over the Broncos. The defense was insane.
Yeah. Also, did Russell Wilson win without Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah.
Probably not.
No, he does not.
Okay, next one.
The Patriots over the Seahawks.
What was the final score of that game?
28-24.
Okay, that was a really good game. There's a game where if Pete Carroll just runs the ball.
Yeah.
So Tom Brady won because of the other coach. Next.
Yeah, Broncos.
Oh, by the way, he has a guy named Gronkowski on that team, too.
Yeah.
And he had Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
But remember, you know, it's all Brady, you know. Okay, next one.
Broncos was all Peyton Manning against the Panthers, right?
Oh, sure. You know, that had nothing to do with Vaughn Miller and DeMarcus Ware and the defense absolutely crushing the Panthers. But, okay. Next.
Patriots over the Falcons.
Yeah, that was a game where Julian Edelman had a huge game. He had Gronkowski. And, so, you know, once again, next.
Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
Patriots.
That one's an odd one because you had to have a backup quarterback win a Super Bowl there. So that didn't even apply.
Yeah.
Starting quarterback didn't even play.
Yep.
Carson Wentz needed Nick Foles to win a ring. Next.
Exactly. The next was a ridiculous Super Bowl, the Patriots over the Rams.
Oh, that was horrible. Tom Brady, do you think he won that Super Bowl without defense? And by the way, he still had Gronkowski and Edelman in that one, too.
13-3.
He had no defense, and people talk about how Brady's unbelievable in the Super Bowl. He did not play well in that game, but the defense was phenomenal. Next.
Chiefs.
Well, we know that Chiefs didn't do it with just Mahomes. We had Kelsey, we had Matthew, we had Chris Jones, who made some big plays in that Super Bowl, and Tyreek Hill had the biggest catch of his career. All right, next.
I don't want to talk about it. Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah. The Buccaneers. Did they win the Super Bowl with just Tom Brady? We know their defensive front four is what the reason they won that game last year. It was not because of Tom Brady. So the point I think you understand hopefully by now, and if you don't, then I'll never be able to explain anything to anyone ever again, is that when you knock Patrick Mahomes, say, well, it's the system, or, well, if you take away Hill, it wouldn't be that good. Listen, let's go back. John Elway didn't win a Super Bowl until he had a running game with Terrell Davis.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning didn't win a Super Bowl until the defense played really well when Bob Sanders came back.
Yeah.
Okay. It's funny. The two Super Bowls that Manning won was because more of a defense than it was him, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Oh, yeah. The 49ers. But you want to go way back. The Cowboys. Do you think it was just Troy Aikman? He had Emmitt Smith, the best offensive line in football, Michael Irvin, for crying out loud. Let's see. What's another one? Joe Montana had Jerry Rice and Roger Craig and Brent Jones. They were all Pro Bowlers. Steve Young had Terrell Owens and Jerry Rice and Ricky Waters. So whenever somebody says, and I've had actually a Bronco fan tell me this, and I think it's hilarious, when they tell me, well, where would Mahomes be without Tyreek Hill? Well, where the hell would John Elway have been without Terrell Davis?
Yeah.
Where would Peyton Manning have been without Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware? Where would a Joe Montana have been without Jerry Rice? Where would have Troy, do you think Troy Aikman was going to win without Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin? No way. So you have to have help. Did Jordan win it by himself? Oh, well, he had a guy named Pippen and Rodman, the second three-peat. And, oh, yeah, Kobe had Shaquille and Pau Gasol. And Steph had Klay Thompson. And then later on, Kevin Durant. See, the point is, when you knock a quarterback because of what's around him, you're jealous, first of all, and you don't have anything else to argue, apparently, if you've gone that far down the road. Because every single championship team didn't win it because of one guy only. The closest example I could say that is possible was when Madison Bumgarner won three games by himself. Although, let's be honest, takes guys to field the ball. Yeah, Bumgarner didn't drive in all the runs offensively in those three wins that he pitched in. But that would be the closest of anybody to single-handedly win a championship in a series. Football is a one-game winner-take-all in the Super Bowl. And every single Super Bowl-winning quarterback has had significant contributions, whether it's a great offensive line, whether – I mean, Brady's won a lot of – half of Brady's Super Bowls have won because of defense, not because of him. And I'm not trying to knock Brady. He gets them there. But Brady has always had, almost always had, at least a good, decent defense.
Oh, yeah.
Mahomes has had crappy defense after crappy defense almost every year. And the one year it was better, won the Super Bowl. And this year might be the best they've had, the way they're going, which maybe will obviously help Mahomes win another Super Bowl ring. But you've got to have help. Well, it's the system. Well, if it's a system, Andy Reid, why didn't he win Super Bowls with Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, and Alex Smith? If it's a coach and his system, why did it take until he got 15 to win a Super Bowl? Because Andy Reid's never won a Super Bowl without Patrick Mahomes. So that argument falls on deaf ears with me as well.
The both of the arguments with the Chiefs fall on deaf ears to me because Alex Smith also had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
And he couldn't win. He won one playoff game.
Yeah.
And blew it's a 21-0 lead at home.
It's the system and the players that you're saying is the reason that you're somehow going to say the reason Mahomes is winning.
Well, of course it is.
Are winning is because of those guys. But if that's the only reason, if it has nothing to do with Mahomes,
then you can plug anybody in there.
Then why did Alex Smith not win a Super Bowl?
Exactly.
He played in the same system with younger, fresher Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So why didn't he win a Super Bowl? I mean, it takes the whole group, the collective of everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just need that extra push. It's going to put you over the top, and obviously the Chiefs got that.
Listen, if Dan Marino ever had a really, really good defense or a real running game, he would have won Super Bowls. He didn't have Terrell Davis. So that's why it's kind of – it's a little tricky when you try to say the greatest quarterbacks of all time. It takes a village to put it all together. But Belichick didn't win any Super Bowls until he had Tom Brady.
Yeah.
49ers didn't win Super Bowls until John Montana came around and then Steve Young. The Chiefs didn't win a Super Bowl since January of 1970 until Patrick Mahomes came. So you may say the quarterback gets too much credit. Well, yeah, I would agree. There's times the quarterback gets too much credit. I think the quarterback gets too much blame. But if you want to sit here and say the only reason Mahomes is good because of the guys around him, well, duh. That's part of championship DNA. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. You've got to have talent around you. I mean, Mahomes can throw perfect pass at a perfect pass, and if he doesn't have Tyreek Hill to catch it and make moves after the catch or Travis Kelce, yeah, that's going to hurt his stats. The team won't be as good. Yeah, but here's the thing. As Dusty so accurately pointed out, Alex Smith had the same people, and he won one playoff game. Patrick Mahomes has won, let's count them, 7 playoff games. Is that right?
I think CB 2.
Got one his first year.
One, yeah, one.
And then won the first year because they lost the AFC title game. Yeah. And then he won 3 because of Super Bowl, 4. And then last year won 2. 6?
6, yeah.
Yeah. So he has 6 times as many playoff wins as Alex Smith. And he had, and Alex Smith had Kelce, and he had Andy Reid, and he had Tyreek Hill. So please stop.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.